This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 52 of What's It Like. My guest is Dan Swecker, state senator from the great state of Washington. How are things in downtown Olympia?
Beautiful, sunny, warming up. I love it.
So, did you grow up there?
No, actually, I was raised in Montana and Wyoming, and I came to Washington right out of high school to attend the University of Washington. I actually only stayed there a year. Then I went into the service, and when I came back, I went to Tacoma Community College. I loved it, and I went to Evergreen as a junior the first year the college was open.
Oh.
And I graduated the second year the college was open. So,
Evergreen, for those not familiar with it, was kind of an experiment in education.
Yeah, and at the time I went, of course, it hadn't really defined itself. It was still looking for its identity, and it was kind of fun to be there the first few years because there were all kinds of discussions and debates about what that would look like. I actually worked for the Office of Cooperative Education as a student intern. Our job was to place student interns. I ended up working at that office for 3 years after I graduated.
Did you come from a large family?
No, I have one brother and one sister.
Oh. So who had the biggest influence on your life growing up?
Oh, gosh. I suppose it would be probably my mom was married several times, and it was probably my first stepdad that sort of took me through puberty and adolescence and the formative years. So, yeah.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Well, I think to some extent it was the divorces that my mother went through, but also I was a pretty intellectual kid. I had high grades, and there's a lot of brain power there to get harnessed and heading in the right direction, and I probably struggled a little bit with some of that.
Was school easy for you?
Yes, very easy.
Yeah. So almost too easy?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was so easy through high school that in some ways I wasn't prepared for the challenges of higher education. Although I managed to adapt to that, initially it was a bit of a surprise and a bit of a challenge.
What childhood experience contributed most to who you are today?
I would guess it's my paper route. I worked from the time I was in the fifth grade. I had a paper route all the way through my junior high and high school years. And I think I developed a strong work ethic. So that probably helped.
Did you always want to be a politician?
No, never did.
So how did you become one?
Actually, when I went to college, my goal was to become a scientist. I was interested in physics and chemistry and all those kinds of things. When I spent my first year at the university as a chemistry major, I was from a real small town in this big city and this big school. Just strange to me. I didn't adapt well. I was still a small town boy. So I quit school, joined the Army. I flew helicopters in Vietnam. And I think I encountered a lot of sort of what I would characterize as social problems, you know, psychological, social, PTSD, all that kind of stuff. And so when I came back, I changed my major to kind of psychology, which actually went pretty well with the Evergreen agenda because that was a big part of their early curriculum were those kinds of courses.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into cooperative education, which included counseling students, educational counseling and stuff, but also placing them in on-the-job training positions. And I learned a whole lot about a lot of different kinds of companies and agencies and jobs. And that was fun. And then I got the bug to raise fish. raise salmon. And so I researched that for a couple of years, which kind of went along with my science background. And then my wife and I started, I got married, and my wife and I started a salmon farm in Rochester in freshwater and operated that for 20 years. During that time, well, during the first 10 years, our big challenges were biological, kind of, you know, learning to grow the fish and providing the right environment. And we were kind of pioneers. We were the first private smolt grower in the United States. There were other people growing smolts, but they did other things too, and the state was growing smolts, and our first goal was to raise smolts for saltwater growers. So we did that. After the first 10 years, we had the biological processes pretty well under control, but then we started running into regulatory challenges, and we were the closest fish farm to the state capital in Olympia. So whenever we would run into these problems, my wife and I would come to Olympia to lobby on behalf of our industry. And eventually we ran into big enough problems that I made a decision to change over to being a lobbyist, at least part-time. And that's how I got intensely involved in politics. I was a lobbyist for 2 years, and my senator quit. So I ran for the appointment to his position, and then I've been running ever since.
So you're a state senator.
That's right.
So what exactly do you do?
Well, our state legislature meets every year in January, the first or the second Monday of January. In even-numbered years, we meet for 60 days, and in odd-numbered years, we meet for 105 days. The reason for the longer session is that we have to do the budget. It's a two-year budget, so we do the budget in the odd years. And when you are a senator, you come up here, and they assign you to several committees where you kind of concentrate your efforts, and then you share what you learn in your committee assignments with other legislators in your caucus. Caucus is in the Senate, the caucus is Republicans and the Democrats. So I took responsibility for several committees and then was responsible to share what I was doing and learning and with my other caucus fellow members, help them make decisions about how they would vote on pieces of legislation that came out of my committees. Over time, there are all kinds of interim activities between sessions. So we get assigned to special committees and there are activities that we have to do throughout the interim. Sometimes it can be a very busy schedule, 2 or 3 days a week quite easily. We also have to continue to meet with our constituents and try to represent their interests. I mean, it's more than a full-time job during session. And it's more than a half-time job during the interim.
So in some ways, you're like teachers and preachers. There's a lot more to the job than the specified hours.
Yeah, and the thing about it is it's a black hole. It will suck up everything you throw at it. So your biggest challenge is limiting your activities to things that you can actually be effective at. You can get so broadly spread that you're not effective at anything.
What's the best thing about your job?
I like the flexibility during the interim to, you know, set my own schedule and make choices about what I'm going to be part of. That's a unique characteristic of my job.
Let me turn the question around. What's the worst thing about your job?
Session. Session is, it's like a marathon. Your whole life goes away. All you do is think about, talk about, act on issues that affect public policy. Sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about issues, that kind of thing. There is another aspect that's also a huge challenge, and that is campaigning to be reelected.
And fundraising?
Fundraising isn't too hard. I don't mind that, but it's when you are on the campaign trail, your time is not your own. It's almost all consumed for about a year. So you end up having to go to every kind of meeting in the world, every parade in the world, every event in the world to get your ID, your name ID out there and that kind of thing. But fundraising, you just call people and they give you money, and I actually do pretty well at that. I don't mind it at all. So,
what type of person would be good at your job?
I think what makes a difference up here more than anything is relationship. And so people who enjoy developing relationships with all kinds of different people probably are going to be the most successful. There's another role that probably I fill that is different from that, and that is that I get deeply involved in issues and study them and understand them, and then I'm able to work with other people to find collaborative solutions to problems. I probably would be better at that if I was more of a relational person. Mm-hmm. I tend to be kind of brain power, but I don't often spend as much time as I should at relations. There's another aspect to that, too, and that is I live close enough to Olympia that I can go home every night. People who live in other parts of the state move to Olympia and stay here during session. So their nights, basically, they spend working or socializing with, going out to dinner with, all those kind of things with other legislators who are stuck here like they are. And that's where a lot of the relationships come mm-hmm. from. So, kind of interesting.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
A typical day during session is I come in the morning here by 8 o'clock. Sometimes I go to a meeting before I arrive at 8 o'clock. Start out, I meet with lobbyists and constituents in my office for several hours usually. Then I go to a committee hearing where we consider pieces of legislation, have people testifying basically every 3 to 5 minutes, different people talking about the issue. Then after that, we tend to go to the floor a couple days a week and vote on a few bills. Over time, the committee activity and the meetings with constituents and lobbyists tend to decrease, and the floor activity tends to increase. And by the end of session, we're spending all of our time on the floor passing bills.
Do you like being famous?
You know, it's kind of water off a duck's back. I don't really care about it. I always try to ignore it, and I rarely try to make a big deal out of the fact that I'm a senator, unless I'm functioning in an official capacity. Well, if it was never something that I really looked forward to.
So, Dan, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I think it's part of that work ethic that I developed when I was growing up. And it's part of the same thing that allowed me to start a business. And it's also probably what I refer to when things get tough. I just try to stay committed and work hard and get through the process.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
Probably reading something that's not related to my job.
Mm-hmm.
I like novels real well. If I have one of those going, I can go to that when I have spare time.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Probably health problems more than anything.
Mm.
In 2008, I injured my back during session, and I waited till after session to have back surgery. It was only partly successful. 2 months after that, I had a hip replacement, which reduced my blood volume, so my heart quit. A week later, my wife had to give me CPR, and actually, my heart quit a couple times. They found I had a birth defect and had to replace the aortic valve. So when, with all of those multiple surgeries so close together, the recovery period was real difficult for me. It was 18 months to work my way through all the recovery. And unfortunately, the back still creates problems. I had another surgery on my back last year, and again, it was only marginally successful. So probably the health issues probably drained on me the most. The other major challenge was serving in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot. And I was, you know, shot down 4 times and crashed twice from mechanical failure.
Oh, my.
Got shot in the leg and, you know, took over 100 hits in my aircraft. Volunteered for a second tour. And, you know, it was one of those things I pushed myself probably to the end of my resources. By the time I got out of there, it was kind of a mess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, later I was diagnosed with PTSD and treated for that, and it was a successful process, which I would highly recommend to anybody else who finds themselves in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through all of these challenges?
Yeah, I became a Christian when I was 32 years old, and my faith is by far the thing that sustains me most, you know. And, you know, basically my sort of ultimate optimism for my my future with God, you know, that's the thing that keeps me on track. So, and it also guides a lot of the things that I do as a politician. Because I'm a strong Christian, I end up providing a lot of leadership on social issues up here. And what I have to remember is that while my job is to speak the truth, I have to do it in love. And love is the hard part. You have to really work at that. And I do work at that. And I think people who, you know, find themselves on the other side of social issues from me are people that respect me and still are able to form close mm-hmm. relationships on other issues as a result of it.
Of course, there's a wide variety of Christians, and they often disagree on social issues amongst themselves.
Yeah, and because I'm a Reform Christian, my basic idea is to interpret the Bible and leave it at that. Don't spend any time. Don't depart from that.
So you have to get along with other Christians and then with other people of different faiths, right?
Yeah, exactly. And people with no faith. But for me, faith is not a criteria for relationship. I'm a collaborative decision maker and problem solver, and I try to find solutions to problems that honor the principles that are important to me and solve the problems that other people are trying to solve. And usually when that happens, we get along fine.
Mm-hmm. If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
I would be a strong advocate for practical experience. And part of that comes from my experience as an internship coordinator at Evergreen College. One of the things I did was place students in on-the-job training positions where they could get a sense for what the job was that they were considering. And usually those experiences had profound effects on people who were making career choices. So the practical experience in the area that you're considering as early in your academic career as possible would be really important. So if it was a commencement address, say, to high school students, I would tell them, you know, when you go to college, start looking for opportunities to volunteer, to get involved with especially the kind of organization that you might ultimately work for. When we got to Evergreen in 1971, there were not many men internships in any field. There were a few in it. They had a practicum in education, and doctors had internships, but pretty much nobody else did. We were very innovative and developed internships in all fields across the board. There was a point in time during the second year at Evergreen when a fifth of the population was away from the campus on internships. And so today it's very different. Today there are internships available just about anywhere you look. On bulletin boards at the average college, through the departments that people are studying in, local recruiters. The list of opportunities just goes on and on. And my first recommendation is that people take advantage of that and kind of get a sense for where they'd like to go and what they'd like to do. And usually at Evergreen, we place students when they were juniors or seniors. So by that time, they pretty much selected a direction. About, my estimate is that about 80% of the time, their internship really confirmed their decision and that they were headed in the right direction. But about 20% of the time, people realized they were going in a direction that they didn't, that was not right for them. Came back and altered their academic career to head in a new direction.
So would you encourage people to take internships earlier in their career?
Yes, as early as possible. And the truth is, you can volunteer at an organization, and it doesn't necessarily have to be through an academic institution or volunteering just for the practical experience. Let's say you volunteer for, some kind of an organization that is a social service organization and you want to be a physicist. Well, the practical experience is valuable in and of itself, regardless of what your academic goal is.
My last question is to help me get better at this process. Is there a defining moment in your life or an event or something that you wanted to say that you haven't said yet?
Probably the only thing that I can think of that is a huge element in my life is my family. Especially as I get older and I see, my kids have kids and get to see the generations out, get to see the legacy that I have planted in my family and see it replicated in future generations. That's really important. So the investments and the commitments that you make early on in your family would pay dividends, throughout the rest of your life and the lifetime of the kids and grandkids that you have.
I want to thank Dan Schwecker for joining me today. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
You bet.